This is the State of Inclusion podcast, where we explore topics at the intersection of equity, inclusion, and community. In each episode, we meet people who are changing their communities for the better, and we discover actions that each of us can take to improve our own communities. I'm Amy Sanders. Welcome. So today, we're happy to welcome Christy Kumar. Christy is the Equity and Social Justice Manager for the City of Madison, Wisconsin. Welcome, Christy.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
So before we get started in talking about your work, maybe you can tell us a little bit about Madison and the City of Madison, the county, and sort of the racial climate that you have where you live.
Of course. Yeah, I think when thinking about context, it's really important to name that, like, I come at a particular point in the story of this context. And so I think recognizing and honoring that it's a generational context, that there are so many that came before me that really even allowed me to kind of take up space in this way. In thinking about context, we have to honor the land that we're on, that I'm on, right? Which is Ho-Chunk land in Madison, or it's also known as Tejok, which means the Four Lakes. And the traditional stewards of this land are the Ho-Chunk peoples, who have a long history pre and post colonization. And it's a story of resilience amidst a lot of pain and violence. And so I think that that story of resilience should be honored when we're recognizing context and space. But when I think, you know, to the question in like a 22 context, in its very basic form, Madison in many places consistently ranks as one of the best places to live in the United States. Now, I don't know what their metrics are, their research is, or what they're doing to make these kinds of lists, but it's like absolutely known that we're meeting all these like best place to live, best place to work, best place to raise a family. And so then you kind of, that becomes coupled with this idea that it's like a progressive liberal space where everyone gets along. And that's a narrative. And I think there's another narrative, and those are the narratives that are actually taking the experience, the lived experience of Black, Indigenous people of color. And, you know, you mentioned in kind of in our conversation when we were talking about me coming, some reports, but like, if you look at data, you know, Wisconsin has some of the worst racial inequities in the nation, with Wisconsin ranking last in the disparity between Black and white children. We're talking about some like extreme disparities when you take that racial lens. And so that's also a narrative. And so when you ask the question, what's the context? To me, the question is, which one are we centering? Which context are we grappling with? Which context are we paying attention to? And what new narratives are we interested in building? Because neither of those are really like wholeheartedly it, right? There's a lot in between. And so I'm interested in that context, those new narratives that we can create that really start to be intentional about talking about race and equity and social justice.
So tell me a little bit about what prompted the city to create your role and what the city wants to accomplish. We'll talk a minute about what you'd like to accomplish, but what is the city hoping to accomplish with your role?
So many factors led to the creation of my position, some that I'm like aware of. And, you know, there's so many that I'm not even aware of. There's so many folks that have like, perhaps they weren't saying in so many ways, we need this position in this place, but like they have been articulating a need for city government to invest in resources, like fiscal resources, to develop a position that tends to these important issues. And so I'm overwhelmed, honestly, when I think about all the different types of labor that went into making this happen. And it was this confluence of things, right? There was no like strategic plan, or perhaps some folks did have a strategic plan around this. But like I said, there's generations of activists who have been asking for racial equity to be at the foundation of what we do in city government. There was a series of fantastic reports that came out, Race to Equity, Urban League of Greater Madison, State of Black Madison report, you know, that were quantifying, using, you know, qualitative and quantitative data to share the lived experience that BIPOC folks know to be true and have been saying, right? Beyond kind of like the report sphere. There's like community organizations and nonprofits who have been saying a lot of this before the buzzwords of equity came into play, right? I feel like that's fairly new, but people have been saying, hey, we need affordable housing. We need healthcare. We need our children to go into schools that feel safe and culturally appropriate, you know, that tend to their well-being. So like all of those things are part of the equity conversation. There might just not be using those kinds of words. So you have all those, I kind of described the push factors from the outside, right? From like the community-based perspective. But then there was a lot of push happening internally within the halls of city government, where you had essentially what I'd say city staff organizing in a really organic way. And they were doing this on top of their other jobs. They were organizing in coffee shops, in boardroom meetings, saying, hey, what if we had an initiative that focused on race? What if the entire city thought about race when they thought about the budget, or when they thought about hiring, or when they thought about retention? Like, what would that world look like? And they were literally doing that dreaming. And they organized to create the Racial Equity and Social Justice Initiative in around 2013. There was like one other model of this, I think out in Seattle at the time, but it really wasn't kind of widespread at this point. And so this is, you know, a huge thank you to all of those push and pull factors. And then you kind of, you know, go into a 2020, 21, 22 context where you've got, you know, you put this against a national landscape. You've got the movement and organizing for Black Lives. You've got BIPOC-led uprisings. And then you also have supportive alders in the city of Madison and a supportive mayor, Mayor Rhodes Conway, who believed in this and is part of the foundation of the values that she wants us to uphold at the city. And so that whole confluence led to this, right? And so I think it's important to name all of those different stakeholders. And so eventually it landed in the Department of Civil Rights. So across the country, there's like equity divisions and offices, and they're situated in different places. Sometimes they're in the mayor's office. Sometimes they're their own department. And I think sometimes they're in the Department of Civil Rights or like a human rights office. And so in the city of Madison, we're at the Department of Civil Rights, and it's a new division that stands along our Affirmative Action and Equal Opportunity Division. So I serve as the manager, and we have a really expansive portfolio. My portfolio covers racial equity and social justice, disability rights and services, language access, neighborhood resource teams, and environmental justice. And so the job means that all of these things are in conversation with one another. And so I think that's, you know, what the city imagined, that these things wouldn't be above or below, one is more than the other, that they get to be held together because they all collectively depend on one another to see success.
So you just described some really important factors, mm-hmm. push and pull factors that helped the city to create the role that you have. And you've described the portfolio that you are responsible for, which is really important. And I love the idea that these subjects are in conversation with one another mm-hmm. and these topics are in conversation with one another. Probably equally important for the people who are listening is what made you decide to take this role? So we know you talked a little bit about how the city decided, but how did you decide to take this role?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I think to answer that, it would be helpful to describe my background for you and for folks, which would get to my why. So I was born in India and immigrated to Sonoma, California, of all places, with my family as a young person. So I identify as first generation Malayali American with deep roots in South India, in Kerala. Professionally, my background is in social justice, primarily around community organizing, community care, and violence prevention work. And so I've worked as an educator in public schools, as a case manager and a crisis responder, working with survivors of trafficking and gender-based violence. And in higher education, working to develop cultures of consent and healthy relationships. So prior to this position, I worked at Brown University leading cross-racial and ethnic coalition building among BIPOC communities. And so I decided to work at the city of Madison because ultimately I'm interested in collective liberation. And I think that there's a role for the government in this pursuit. I have often been in that pursuit outside of government spaces. So admittedly, this is new for me to be on this side of things. But I think that there's value that there are folks invested in city government who believe in the concept of collective liberation. And so, you know, in my previous roles, say when I was working around gender-based violence work, we focused on gender. That was at the center of what we did. And I felt like I was always bringing in race and class and ability. And I'm like, but hey, let's think about how these interact. And then when I was working on like coalition building around race, I felt like I was like, hey, but wait, what about the gender piece? What about the ability piece? What about the immigration piece? What about the language access piece? Like bringing that in. And so I came to the city of Madison because to me, the job was an opportunity to say, it is your job to think about all these things. It is not extra. It's not like a footnote. It is your job to build the capacity for this city to collectively hold all of these things, like I said, in conversation with one another. That folks invested in these types of frameworks aren't fighting against each other, but working together, right? And so I know that government has been a barrier to exactly what I'm talking about. So there's let's name that deep irony. Everything that I'm poetically thinking about in a new world, we have to recognize that government has been a barrier to justice, continues to be a barrier to justice. But there was this unique opportunity where I saw that we could be, where a division and a city was interested in building solutions that were more compelling than these injustices, right? So doing the work of building solutions. And so that's why I came here.
So since you've been with the city, how do you feel you've been able to realize that? What areas are you focused on and what programs are you guys implementing to make that difference that you want to see in the world?
Mm. Yeah, so I've been in this position for a year, and I think a friend had asked me, well, you know, what are you proud of, or how have you seen the work manifest? And for me, I think the unit of measurement that I'm particularly interested in is relationship building. To me, that is what this work is. It's care work. It's relationship building. It's learning how to be right with one another and to care for one another through like harm and conflict and frustration. So what I've seen is like the work of relationship building, which is slow until it's fast. We teach that kind of in our social justice facilitator spaces that we're trying to build. We have a saying where trust doesn't need to be built into these like grand gestures. Trust happens in Zoom rooms meetings all the time. When like, you know, we started this call where I said, you know, I wasn't feeling so well. And you said, well, you know, if you need a break or, you know, if you want to take care of yourself, like we prioritize that. That's a moment. We just met each other, right? And so that's the work of trust is slow until it's fast. And so that's what I've been predominantly committed to, is like, how do we build the spaces, AKA meetings, AKA Zoom rooms, AKA phone calls, that feel equitable in and of themselves? Because if the meeting or the phone call or the email isn't loaded with care and equity, then for sure our strategic plans will not be. For sure, we will fail. So I've been mostly really excited to see kind of like the seeds settle around those relationship building pieces that we're trying to do at the city.
So maybe this is a good point to ask, what are some of the partnerships or relationships that you've established as you've gone about doing this work? And also, where do you look for inspiration, advice, or hope, if you will?
Mm-hmm. So I'll speak locally first. You know, we have a fabulous YWCA chapter and there's like a racial justice arm of that chapter. And they have a beloved conference that they do every year. It's the Racial Justice Annual Summit. And I got to join this year for the first time, and it was virtual. And so we actually had people from all over the country joining. And so if there's anyone kind of in our area, I urge you to consider coming to the YWCA's Racial Justice Summit. And what's interesting is, to answer your question, they had some of my favorite practitioners that I looked up to at the summit this month. So I'm really thinking about them. I'm thinking about Adrienne Marie Brown, who many know as many things. She's a doula. She's a social justice facilitator practitioner. She's a transformist justice practitioner. Just does so many different things. Writer, activist, all the things. And the Y also had Mia Mingus come on. And Mia Mingus is one of, you know, kind of the founding members of the transformative justice and disability justice movement, really huge in the Bay Area around doing the work with the organization Sins Invalid and you know, for resources, has a phenomenal blog called Leaving Evidence that I would highly suggest to anyone interested in accountability work. So just at the Y, it was phenomenal to like log on and see folks I've been following for years kind of speak directly to me, to us, to Madison. Kind of brought some worlds together for me. Additionally, I think about GAIR. You've probably had folks talk about GAIR, the Governmental Alliance on Racial Equity. And they have their annual conference coming up in a few weeks. And I went virtually last year. And so I will be, fingers crossed, going in person to meet real people. So I'm excited to kind of grow some networks and some community there. But beyond kind of that local Madison, the YWCA, and then the GAIR national context, you know, I really think that racial equity and social justice work necessitates creativity. We're not going to figure out the world's greatest problems without robust creativity, reimagining things that we never thought were possible. So I really like to find inspiration outside of like perhaps your typical sources, like find it in art, find it in nature, find it in creative expressions of like, you know, I love thinking about my grandmother and like her recipes as inspiration when I'm doing this work. Like, quite honestly, like how did she make something happen out of nothing? And all these systems kind of going against her, she found joy and solutions. So I really think we have to like look beyond perhaps the government setting to find hope.
Maybe the threads that you talk about coming together in your organization and the conversations that are taking place. What are some of the areas that you think other communities out there should be thinking about?
Absolutely. So within our disability and rights and services program, I'm really excited because we're in an awesome new partnership with a local organization called the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. And specifically, we're working with their Partners in Business initiative, which helps service providers and employers support workers with disabilities to be successful and independent. The Wisconsin Act 323 was passed in 2018 and provides grants and technical assistance to help businesses meet workforce needs by hiring and supporting those with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And so the city of Madison has been doing this for a long time, you know, even before kind of our new partnership and before this new division. And so that's something that like we have experience in. What's really exciting is this last week we had a presentation where we talked about this initiative in the racial equity space. So there's all these different racial equity meetings, right? And so we actually were like, hey, we're talking about disability rights and disability justice. Yeah, we're in the right meeting. We're at the right place. Y'all are in the right spot because these two things are connected. There are folks of color who have disabilities, right? Like this is a truth that needs to be honored. And our strategies for developing racial equity are actually in alignment with our strategies for disability rights and justice. And so we talked about different tenets of disability justice, and one of them is interdependence. It's this idea that like, actually we need one another. We all do. to the very core, we need one another to be well. And so this is not some like strange initiative that makes us like think outside the scope of how we often think. It's like, hey, employees help each other. And that's what we need to do for this initiative to take off and for hiring managers to see the value in this type of work. So we're really trying to thread this concept of interdependence throughout the different initiatives we have and connect it to, you know, our value of well-being at the city.
You said the city was organizing even before you came mm-hmm. aboard. Obviously, you're somewhat of a catalyst for making that happen mm-hmm. within the mm-hmm. city. How is that being received?
So I'll say it's being received really well. And I'm grateful to the folks that have come before me who have set the conditions by which people are able to receive me well. So let me tell you about what I mean. In 2013, if I had been saying things I had been saying, I don't think I would be received well, perhaps, because people did so much work at meetings, at conferences and spaces to like push people's thinking and learning so that when, by the time I joined in 2021, it was like, yeah, we believe in equity. And it kind of seems like pretty standard operating procedure, but that's because so many people had to go through really hard environments to kind of like get folks there. That's why it's really important for me to say I join at a particularly privileged part of the story. Now, I will say like there are difficulties, of course. I'm in that particular moment where I would say a lot of folks are like, yeah, I agree. Just tell me what to do. And I just laugh. I'm like, well, if only I could hand you a blueprint that would get you to where you need to go. And that we actually don't know. We have to fumble through it together. And I need you to be along for the ride. So I think that the hard part is when we have complicated answers to complicated structures and people want the golden ticket. And when I think about how people have received me, you know, I don't come from city government. I come from working with students. I come from working with artists where we like take a lot of joy in getting to know one another and relationship building. And so I think, you know, maybe the cultural moment for me was realizing that like, you know, if you're in a meeting with me, you're going to probably be spending the first 10, 15 minutes on a check-in question. We're not going to skip it. And that is the meeting. I remind folks all the time, like, I know y'all are thinking, when is the meeting going to start? Because we have an hour and we're 15 minutes in and we're just getting around doing the round robin check-in. This is the meeting. We do need to know one another to do this work. And you know, time can bend because we can still leave on time. We don't go late because we did the check-in. And so I think that culturally, people have received that with, maybe they were a little cautious in the beginning because I could see them looking at their clocks, but we're at this place where they now expect that from me and my team. And I'm just so grateful that they're willing to dive in that relational way.
I love your answer. And I want to revisit a couple of parts of it because people who are listening may not be in the same space and time in their community that you find yourself in Madison. So First, what you told us is there is a place where communities can accept that working on equity and inclusion and social justice is the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can find yourself in that place. Yes, it requires some hard work to get there. And in your case, you feel that many people before you did a lot of that hard work and some of that mm-hmm. heavy lifting and pushing and pulling to make that happen. But you can find yourself in a place where that is an accepted norm,
yeah,
from which you can then continue the work. And absolutely. So I just want to celebrate that for a minute because I don't think everybody who's listening finds themselves in that same place. Some are just beginning the journey. And they wonder if they will ever be at that place.
Mm.
And others may be further ahead in the journey than you are or than
right.
I am in thinking as well. But there are a lot of people who are not quite there yet. And so I just want to celebrate the fact that you feel like Madison is and that it makes your work more possible, more positive, more achievable by working together, even if sometimes people wish there was a golden ticket for taking the next step, because honestly, all the steps in this are somewhat difficult. They can be joyful too. And that's one of the things I wanted to come back to. When I read the announcement about your position, since it's relatively new, I was a little surprised when your boss said in the announcement, Christy Kumar is an experienced social justice organizer and program manager working to create anti-violent, joyful and equitable communities. And I mean, I totally get the equitable communities and the job description, right? But joyful and anti-violent. Say a few words about that. That's an interesting way for him to have chosen to describe your job.
Yeah, I'd love to share. So for me, the anti-violent concept is similar to the concept of like anti-racist versus not racist. So like anti-racism is a conscious choice. Anti-violence is a conscious choice. That means actively working to understanding explaining and tending to the roots of violence so we can transform it. So it means a commitment to re-examining the social structures that we support, rethinking our implicit core beliefs about race and other social systems. And then kind of from that place, I think that joy is possible. And I think that joy has to actually be like a discipline. Folks will say hope is a discipline. Joy is also a discipline. Dr. Cornel West famously said, justice is what love looks like in public. And I think that we kind of separate these concepts, justice, equity, diversity, inclusion, and they're kind of separated from these concepts like joy, belonging, and love, and care. And so if there's any opportunity for me to say that those are informing one another, I'm going to take the moment to say that those inform one another, because I love strategic plans. I love color-coded blueprints, right? And I, please believe me that I love all the documents that say, you know, this is our plan and we're going to get here and there. But we're not where we are for a lack of plans, right? We haven't yet reached like racially equitable societies for a lack of plans and research. The reason we're not there is because we haven't necessarily been taught or allowed to do like an embodied practice where we are connecting the joy and the dignity piece, the belonging piece, the care piece into our work. And so that's why I know those words are meaningful to me. I think I told you earlier, if the meeting isn't equitable, the outcomes won't be equitable. If the meeting isn't joyful, the outcomes aren't going to be joyful. So I think we can't just labor on with painful processes in the name of justice. We can't just labor on with meetings and kind of forums that don't feel right, thinking, well, we're doing this to create a better world for future generations. So that's my piece around the joy. And it's hard. Like, okay, it's not joyful every day, every moment. We'll be honest. Like Angela Davis says, knowledge is produced through struggle. So you got to earn it. You got to earn the joy for sure.
There's a question that it makes me want to ask you too is, so you said you've been at this job for about a year. And so clearly you've had some time to reflect on taking on this role and changing your focus. So if you could go back in time and give yourself some advice back before you took the job, what would you tell yourself?
I would affirm. Well, here, let me back up. I joined in a pandemic. I joined with the Zoom world. And I think that's really important to like my own processing of my own story, because there's so much possibility with this type of connection. Like we got to meet and we got to talk today over Zoom. We had some technical difficulties and we were able to adapt. And so like, there's like a lot of opportunity, and like disabled communities have been telling us for so long that there are possibilities outside of in-person work. And so we're at that place where we're now actually kind of manifesting that. And you in the Zoom world lose what I call the moments in between moments. So let's say there was, you know, my first meeting, I would probably meet you on the walk there, right? Like on the way there to the room. And I'd probably tell you, oh, hey, I'm new. Do you know where room 201 is? And you'd be like, yeah, of course. And then we chit chat. And then maybe we'd start the seeds of a relationship. I didn't have that. I still don't have that. We're still on Zoom. So I join and the screen starts and we're all boxes. And so I think I would tell myself that I need to focus on the conscious unboxing of myself. You are not a box. You are a whole person, and connection needs to be designed. I tell folks that all the time when we're training and doing facilitation around social justice. Connection needs to be planned for. We can't assume it's going to happen. We have to plan for it. We have to tend to it. We have to hope it. We have to plant the seed so it'll grow. And so I had to kind of like make my own moments in between moments, which at times felt like I was taking up energy or space. Like, hey, could I talk to you just casually? It's not even a big deal, but could we just connect over a virtual coffee, right? I wasn't having those moments in the hallways. And so I think about that anytime we have a new employee come. So we're actually thinking it within the equity world, how can we revolutionize our onboarding processes, right? how can we make sure that folks have someone they can talk to who are onboarding buddies? How can we design connection in today's remote world?
So I love that wisdom. Connection has to be designed and planned for. And I love the fact that you would give yourself some room and some advice about that and how the challenges of COVID have affected you, but affected of us all, but also created so many opportunities mm-hmm. for us. So that's a lot of good wisdom that you just shared with your earlier you and with us as well. Christy, I just want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with State of Inclusion today and really appreciate your wisdom and your insight.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been an honor, and I'm excited to stay tuned and listen to the more wisdom coming my way with all your next guests. So thank you so much.
I loved this discussion with Christy Kumar today. It was encouraging to know that in Madison, Wisconsin, they've reached a point where their work with equity and inclusion is part of their city's business as usual. Christy also reminded us that equity and inclusion are all about relationships and trust. She told us that equity and inclusion live in the smallest everyday actions that we take, in those meetings, in those phone calls, in the emails. And if those individual small actions are not equitable and inclusive, our big outcomes together never will be. She also reminded us that while the work we all do in equity and inclusion and in transforming our communities can be challenging and is not always easy, it can be and should be joyful. This has been the State of Inclusion podcast. Join us again next time. And if you enjoyed this episode, the best compliment for our work is your willingness to share these ideas with others. So leave us a review. We'd love your comments. Thanks so much for listening.